It's really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are at 12:14 on 720 WGN in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Welcome to the Biz Lunch. I'm Steve Bertrand. Thanks very much for joining us. We start on Mondays with the folks from Chicago Inno. Catherine Davis is here. Jim Dahlke, the senior editor from Chicago Inno and the regional office in as well. Welcome to both of you. Welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Okay, so let's start with Brewbike, right? Catherine, you wrote about Brewbike, and we've talked about this company before, right?
Yeah.
It's a kid who pedals around Northwestern and sells cold coffee.
Yeah. So his name is Lucas Phillips, and he started doing this in fall 2015. So he's been doing this for about 3 years now. And yeah, the idea is, you know, portable coffee stands housed in custom-made cargo bikes that you can bike around campus, park in high-traffic areas, get students and faculty to buy.
Are you selling cold coffee, cold brew?
Yep, cold brew only from Limitless Coffee.
So this is the, you know, when I first moved to the city, there were guys who would sell snow cones out of carts and things like that, and people were always trying to shut them down. We've changed a lot now. This is a growing business, right? And he's raised quite a lot of money now.
Yeah. So just last week, he closed an $800,000 seed round and says he's going to use that money to expand to other colleges. So right now, it's just at Northwestern. But, you know, I think the idea is to take it to some warmer climate states where, you know, you can have this outdoor bike.
So poor Lucas has a great idea in a very bad spot, right? I mean, he's a student at Northwestern. And when he's trying to sell cold coffee during the school year, the warm months, the students aren't here. And then during the cold months, I don't know how many people are buying iced coffee.
Yeah, so kind of what they've done to supplement that is that they kind of have a retail shop that they've set up indoors. So, you know, you can still, of course, go get the cold brew there.
Right.
But, you know, something to supplement, you know, when you can't ride a bike in snow.
So, Jim, what does a guy do like this? So he's got this great idea. He's raised $800,000. He's sold, I think, or he's had $150,000 in sales since he started, so it looks like he's profitable. It's not huge. He's paying some workers, too. When you take in this outside money, is it sort of a deal, I don't want to say with the devil, but you start to lose some control.
Well, Brewbike is kind of an interesting business from a venture capital perspective, right? It's not the typical business that you think about when you think about taking on like venture capital funding. So interesting, one of their investors is Matt Matros, which is a well-known entrepreneur around town, founder of Protein Bar and Limitless Coffee. So definitely some, like, you know, in big names and folks around the beverage industry are backing them. But yeah, basically what this does is all about scale. So how can we get this in more college campuses? Really, you're going to see, obviously, the revenue change when you can get this kind of brew bike into more college campuses, especially, as Catherine mentioned, places with a little warmer climate year-round kind of operation.
So, if outside capital is coming in, the idea is that they're going to want to see this company eventually sold away from Lucas.
Yeah, I mean, that's the name of the venture capital game, right? I mean, when you take outside funding, you have to have an eye on an exit sort of one way or another. The venture capitalists who are funding you want a return on that investment. So curious to see where Brewbike kind of goes from here, especially when it comes to who might be a logical acquirer.
I don't know if Lucas is on the list, Catherine, but you guys put together a list of entrepreneurs in Chicago, technology entrepreneurs under 25.
Lucas is on it.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him. I just looked at the mugshots for these people on this, the winners here are the people on the list. And I love it because, you know, you've got some of them are so buttoned down and then other guys are in hoodies and some women in sweats and things like that. It just speaks to the different generation of leadership coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one person that kind of stands out to me is Nick Hamburger, the founder and co-CEO of Quavos. And so he's, you know, a student at the University of Chicago and founded the startup there. And Quavos makes a high-protein snack chip whose primary ingredient is egg whites.
I get that.
Yeah.
Quavos.
And so what's interesting about them, you know, the reason they stood out when I wanted to put them on this list was because they're one of five startups in Kraft Heinz Springboard, their new accelerator program,
right,
for, you know, CPG startups.
So, Jim, what do we take from a list like this?
really what I take from a list like this is, you know, these are, you know, Chicago's entrepreneur stars of tomorrow, right? So these are the folks who are, you know, graduated from a lot of the local universities. They're taking part in some accelerators around town. I mean, these are the folks who are kind of showing really interesting ambition and really interesting startup ideas at age 24 and younger. I mean, they're more accomplished I am, at, you know, getting over to 30 here. So like, very envious of a lot of these kids.
Well, me too, 30, 32. I get that. Okay, so those are the ones coming up. You guys also have the 50 on Fire list coming out. I want to take a break, come back. We'll touch on that. But I'm just fascinated by this Pour My Beer company, where you can self-serve at a bar. Okay, Jim, you wrote a piece about this company, Chicago company, called Pour My Beer, which it just fascinates me. Tell me about it.
Yeah, Pour My Beer is a Chicago startup, and what they do is they allow bars to go bartenderless. They created this self-pouring technology, both the software and the hardware, to let you be at a bar and pour your own beer.
So I know there's a restaurant maybe in Wilmette or somewhere where you can pour your own bottle of wine, you go up in the tap and do that. But we're talking about whole bars here, where that's all that they do.
Exactly. So they are kind of the technology that powers Tapster, which is in has locations in Wicker Park, and then just as of last week, Lincoln Park, and they do Navigator Tap Room in Logan Square. And basically, what they do is they provide these taps, which are all sort of lined up against the wall. You're really taking the bar out of the equation,
right? You take the bar out of the bar.
Exactly. You take your glass up to the wall and pour the tap yourself, and you pay by the ounce.
So, Catherine, how does one flirt with the bartender?
Well, I guess in this case you wouldn't be doing that.
But should bartenders be concerned?
You know, maybe. I mean, you know, this is just kind of how we continue to see industries being changed and innovated, you know?
Right.
Like, it'll be interesting to see how people can use this, and if it's really, you know, like we were talking about off air about some issues with pouring your beer. Like, are you good at pouring from a tap? Maybe not. That's one good reason to have a bartender
around.
Have
you been to one? Have you tried this?
I have not tried this.
So Dalkey has, right?
I have,
and yes. You like it?
I do like it. So I think it's interesting.
Well, tell me about the Catherine's point, though. You've got to have a good pour.
Exactly. So it's going by the ounce. So it's the liquid that comes out of the tap into your glass is what counts for
payment. So it's like prepaying to fill up your gas tank.
Yeah, right? You can have a prepay, or you can just kind of have like a running tap going too.
Okay.
But basically what happens is, like, if you fill up your glass with foam, that still counts because it's coming out of the tap. So the tap's got to be working properly, and you have to be, you know, angle your glass just so. But it's interesting, right? So like, what they say, the founders of this company say, you know, this idea is never going to replace your traditional corner tavern where you've got the bartender. People still want to belly up to the
right.
bar.
Well, they say that.
Well, what's interesting, too, is that, you know, they don't believe that, like, this is going to be the disruptor, quote-unquote, of bars. There's going to always be they're always going to coexist with each other.
The thing that I understand that, because if you want the camaraderie, or the, you know, if you want to flirt with the bartender, you're going to go to a bar. But if you don't want that, before these tapless rooms, you didn't have an option. You had to go to the bar, too.
Mm-hmm.
So those bars are going to lose those customers.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, think about the bar experience. Sometimes you want to interact with the bartender, and other times you want to do the exact opposite. Like, I just want a full glass of beer and to chill with my friends. So you don't really want to have a lot of interaction with the bartender. At some places, in other places, you do, right? So when you think about what kind of bar this could be disrupting, quote-unquote, it's going to be that kind of place.
Here's what I want, Catherine. When I go to one of these bars, I don't want to spend 20 minutes, okay, 10 minutes, pouring over a list of 132 possible beers, choosing one, and then asking the waitress for it and having her tell me, oh, we just ran out of that one.
Right, yeah.
Which happens all the time, I think. They still would have that issue here, I would think.
One other thing that I would really like about this is your ability to be able to try a lot of different beers. You know, so you can get 3 ounces of this or that and, you know, kind of make your own flight, which I think is a cool thing, especially as craft beer becomes, you know, such an interest for people.
And you're not waiting in line. They sell this as a way to cut down on the lines, and you say that generally there are plenty of choices where there's not a line for a beer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe if there's a really sought-after tap, right, you might get a little bit of a wait.
Like,
but
Corona Light?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Bud Light. Generally, this is a no-waiting situation. It's just go up to the tap, and you really what you're doing is trying beers. The idea is you're trying something you've never had before. So, the goal is to really kind of capitalize on this craft beer boom and to try as many things as you can.
What happens, we're almost out of time, but what happens, there are dram laws in Illinois where the bartenders watch the people to make sure that they're not overserved.
Yeah, so basically you get a card at the beginning and scan the card before you pour your beer, and you get two beers until you have to connect with the guy on staff to make sure that you're not too drunk.
So once you've had a couple, you have to go renew your card.
You get two beers, and then you got to check back in. So the bartender there can kind of cut you off at any time, but it's a two-beer-at-a-time limit.
And you wouldn't have like a designated rechecker in for you. You would have to do it yourself.
That would be right. You got to do it on your own.
Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago. And oh, real quick, 10 seconds. Give me on 50 on Fire, because people should check this out.
Yeah, check us. Our website is chicagono.com. And just last week, we announced 50 on Fire, our big end-of-year awards event. 50 people and companies heating up Chicago Tech. A great look back on the year and the companies that are doing really well.
Check it out at chicagono.com. You guys, thanks. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, thanks, Noma T. This is Steve Bertrand. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. You know, I was just thinking of this not too long ago. I grew up in Manteno, a small town, and in back in the day in the 70s, you know, guys would get pickup trucks and they would pay someone to paint their name on the side of the pickup truck. And a lot of times it would say, you know, Joe Smith and Sons. Family-owned businesses were big then, and they still are. And, well, there's this Family-Owned Business Council. Let me get that correct. The Family Business Council out of DePaul. The president, Mark Wiese, is here, along with the executive director, Judy Hogel, to talk a little bit about that. And they've got a program coming up. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks, Steve, for having us.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, who's going to start here? Why is it important or necessary to have a family business, well, a family business council rather than just a business council? Why does a family-owned business have sort of different issues than a regular business?
Well, Steve, we serve both.
You know, I say regular business. I bet the percentage of family-owned businesses is pretty high.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It sure is. We serve both. And when you think about it, even an entrepreneur can turn into a family business.
Right.
It's a family asset.
Right.
So it's that different dynamic of working with your dad, working with your son, working with your brother that might have different needs than a regular business where we're just all employees.
Mark, what's your experience with that?
I started an electrical contracting company 23 years ago as an entrepreneur, and originally the intention was to be able to afford college for my children and things like that. Well, then my kids got older, and so did I, and I had to figure out what in the heck I'm going to do with this business.
Right.
So the Chicago Family Business Council was huge. And sharing experience with me through other people who've already been through that process. And now one of my sons is involved in a business with me. My other son has got his own business, and I have a third son who's not interested, but that's okay. But it's the dynamic part of it.
I don't want to, you know, talk out of school here about your sons, but that's sort of the dilemma that someone faces, right? You've got to, you might have a son who really wants the job who's not up to it. You might have a son who doesn't want the job who is, and that's the sort of issues that you had to face.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And then how do you transition that business to your family in a fair and equitable manner? That was a huge, hurdle to overcome for
me. Judy, I'm sort of reluctant because I don't want to find out all of Mark's secrets, but or have him reveal all the family secrets. But how does that happen, right? So if one child takes over, there are three or four children, how do you divide that up?
So fair doesn't always mean equal.
Okay.
Right? And so we really, research has shown, put the best person in place to run the business.
Okay.
And it's still a family asset. So then there's a family board, and family can still be stockholders, but they don't have to necessarily be running the business.
But if you're the family member who is running the business, is your piece of the pie a little bit bigger?
You're paid for the job that you do.
Okay.
So on top of being an owner, you still have a salary for being president, and it should be fair market value.
Mark, what has the Family Business Council then done for you? Why would you suggest it to other people?
What has done for me is... it's given me a broader perspective of the overall challenges that we all face as business owners. Everybody has unique challenges, and we get together in groups and forum groups and share ideas and challenges. And, you know, in my case, I parachuted into a bunch of friends now who are brilliant people that I learned from. You know, I'm just an electrician. I just started out as an electrician. I didn't go to business school or any of that stuff. So I went to the School of Hard Knocks.
Right.
So to be around a bunch of people who are smarter than I am is an honor, and it's great to learn from each other.
So you kind of found your crowd.
I certainly did.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right, so there's a program coming up, I think, next week, right?
This grit October program? 11th.
It's all about grit, Judy. We all need more grit.
Yeah, we sure do. I'm really excited about this one. Not only are we bringing in a great author, Paul Stoats, but Marty Ozinga is coming in.
Yeah, Marty's been on the show.
He's great, and the family's great, and they're celebrating 90 years.
Wow.
So it'll be great to have his story and share with them. We're giving a WGN discount, 50% off. Business community can go register. We are open to the general public.
Well, tell me about where it is and things like that.
So it's in Oak Brook at Le Meridien.
Okay.
4 o'clock in the afternoon. Marty's going to open it up and share his story. Paul's going to give a keynote. We have dinner. It'll be a nice event. There should be about 120, 130 people there.
And let's talk a little bit about grit, Mark, because that is one of those things that people, you know, that was sort of a big catchphrase from a few years ago. But, you know, growth, resilience, instinct, tenacity, that sort of stuff that makes up grit is something that's important if you're running a business.
Absolutely it is. Yeah, you definitely have to. In today's world, everything's constantly changing. And you just have to be able to adapt at all times.
So you look to me like you're a young guy. Have you handed over the business?
No. I'm 51, and my son is he's actively involved in business. He's vice president of the company, and
So you're making the plans for when you need to make the transition, but you're
we're already transitioning.
Yeah. Will you be when the transition is complete, will you be able to walk away, or will you be the the former leader who doesn't quite let go?
I hope to be the guy that can let go and let the next generation come in and do their magic.
Yeah.
You know,
but what are the odds?
I'm pretty good about that.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I tend to let people do their thing.
I mean, Judy, that's one of the things that the family businesses have to deal with, right?
And it's hard. It's emotionally hard for so many people, especially the founder. That's their heart and soul.
We were talking earlier about businesses that take in outside capital with the idea of eventually being sold. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about in this segment are the businesses that don't, right? And so you're passing this down, and something that you've sort of grown with and treasured, you have to figure out a way to not completely hold on to.
Yeah.
All right, it's called the Chicago Family Business Council. And one more time, where do people find information about this event?
www.chicagofbc.com events.
Great to talk to both of you. Thanks for coming by.
Hey, thank you so much, Steve.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. There are a number of resources for professional athletes out there, but did you know that there is a National Basketball Retired Players Association? Yep, it's right here in Chicago, and they just got a new CEO, 37-year-old Evanston native Scott Rochelle. His role is to help manage programs that assist over 1,000 retired basketball players with an age range from 28 to 94. The nonprofit was founded in 1992. And they work with NBA, ABA, WNBA, and the Harlem Globetrotters to transition them into life after the game. Who knows? Maybe those unique skills could be good hires in the business world. And, okay, don't yell at me because I know it's only September, but this next one is about the holidays. All right. Whoa. It's just an update on the Chris Kindle Mart at Wrigley Field. They'll be taking this year off due to Wrigley construction, but the ice rink outside the field and the downtown location at Daly Plaza will still be there. The Wrigley Chris Kindle Mart attracted nearly 200,000 visitors last year, so chances are they're going to be bringing it back. You know what they say, always keep them wanting more. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. On the phone line now is Elise Glink, the woman behind ThinkGlink.com, BestMoneyMoves.com, and just about anything you can imagine. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Nice to be here.
Okay, so I'm sitting in a hotel lobby in Milwaukee yesterday morning reading the Milwaukee Journal and bothering producer Bennett Wakenight with emails way too early on a Sunday morning. But I was reading a story about Abbott Labs that apparently was covered here by the Tribune in late August. I hadn't read it until yesterday, about this new program they have to help their young employers with their student loans and how it might sort of be a precursor of things to come. Can you explain it for me?
Sure. So Abbott went to the IRS because they had developed a program that would allow their employees who direct a certain amount of the paycheck towards student loan repayments, right, as millennials and actually even some Gen X workers do, would still get a tax-deductible employer contribution into their 401k accounts. So Abbott has a great matching program. If you contribute 2% to your 401k, they'll give you 5% wow. as a company match. What Abbott wants to do and has received the blessing of the IRS to do is if the employee takes their 2% contribution and puts it into their student loans, Abbott will still make the 5% matching contribution to the 401k, giving the employee reduced student loans, but also some retirement savings.
And the beauty there is, I guess, two things. It's tax savings, right? And the other is that when you're paying off your student loan, it's sort of critical time to start your long-term savings. This is a way to begin that long-term savings, but still pay off the loan.
Absolutely, and it's the first time that a company, and this has been talked about for the last few years as the millennial student debt crisis in particular has come into fast relief and people have really begun to understand how deep and how bad it is. It's the first time a company is asked to be able to make this contribution, this matching contribution, without having the employee put in any money into their 401k account. And it's considered that this ruling might serve as a model for employers nationwide that are looking at some pretty innovative ways to help their employees pay down student loan debt.
Well, that's the thing, right? The bosses want to lure in young workers and they want to have student loan programs to do it. But if you're just giving them money to pay down your student loan, that's taxed, right? Generally, that's taxed. So this contributing to the 401k is a way to increase benefits and not increase the tax burden.
That's correct. There are some other really innovative things going on out there, which I think we'll also start to see the IRS get asked about. One of them is there's a platform out there that would allow an employer to pay the student loan directly through this platform so that the money doesn't ever go into the hands of the employee, so the employee's not taxed on it, and it just goes as a straight contribution from the employer directly to the student loan debt. The question on the books is that going to be tax deductible to the employer, or would it still be taxed to the employee as a gift might be? But if it's under the gift amount, is there a way to finesse that? And I think that's going to be something else that we'll see the IRS be asked about this year.
And so right now the IRS says yes to Abbott, but it's a singular yes, and we'll see now whether they expand that to make that a program that other companies can follow through on.
Yeah, well, the IRS didn't even name Abbott. It was an unnamed letter, so unnamed company in the letter. But Abbott stepped forward and said, no, we're the ones who asked for this, and it's specifically for one use only, meaning only for Abbott. But you can bet that there's going to be a whole bunch of companies that start to go to the IRS with a similar ruling.
All right. Now, economy's doing very well, so I would imagine that's good news for home sales. But there's a report out just this morning from Freddie Mac that says things are slowing down.
Yeah, this is really crazy. We're going to see home sales wind up less than last year, which is kind of unbelievable. What's happening is mortgage interest rates are moving up. They're right around 4.5% right now. Sometimes we're getting a little above, a little below. They're expected to stay there this year and move over 5% next year. At the same point, we're also seeing home prices start to move up. And the amazing thing is not everybody can afford a $4 million house. I saw that Crane story, I think it was last week, where they said about every 5 days somebody's buying an extremely expensive house in Chicago.
And one of those people that's not me.
Yeah, it's not me either, but that's happening sort of every day, several times a day in other places around the country, like in San Francisco, Los Angeles, even Denver, Boston, and New York. So people are looking for moderately priced homes, and there just are not enough out there. In fact, home builders are not even building in any significant numbers, first-time buyer or even first trade-up homes, and that's causing a real shortage in the market.
Elise Glink, check out thinklink.com. Also, Best Money Moves. Great to talk to you again. I appreciate it.
You bet. See you soon.